Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. And look, I was quicker this time. I told you I was ready and I was here.
Look at you. Did they give youngest child prizes? Is that what you're
They
looking
sure.
for? The correct answer is being the youngest child is the prize in itself. Blah blah. Stuart's on the light rail. Charlotte has like a transit system called the light rail. It's basically like the subway but above ground.
No,
And
wait, a quick question though. It is called the light rail. Okay, see, I was trying to explain it to somebody recently, and I was like, it's like the light rail in Denver, but it's not a light rail. But I was wrong. It is, in fact, a light rail.
I don't know what the light rail in Denver is like, but I'm sure you do.
I think it's the same. I mean, I don't really know what the one in Charlotte is like either. Did we ever ride it or
No,
did we just look at it?
we bougie taxied,
Okay.
but we moved beside it because my husband Stuart doesn't drive. He can drive, but he doesn't drive. And it's a really nice thing to have just to zip around town. But yeah, it doesn't go underground.
Okay.
It
So it
uses
is the
the
same.
I think it uses, I may be confusing with the Beltline Atlanta, but I think it uses some of the old sort of like train tracks. So it doesn't go underground. It just goes above. But he was
Here.
he texted me and he was like, there's so many young people, so many youths on this train. He was like, I know, that's how you know we're officially old. He's like, there's so many young people. He was like, is there something going on? And I literally just got through taking care of a dog running and then in the shower I was like, Stuart, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know.
Know? We
And then
are not
he's
part of the youth.
I know and then he sent me a screenshot of like Travis Scott and I was like, literally the only thing I know about that man is he made a baby with Kylie Jenner.
I
That's
was just gonna say,
it.
isn't that one of the Jenner?
I think I but also like I lie. I mean, I was being flippant, but I also know like that he had that tour where people got killed, and that was a big deal. The
Oh,
what was
yes,
it,
that was
Astro
one.
World or something?
Yes. Oh, okay.
He's in Charlotte, so maybe that's where the youths are
Maybe
going.
that. Well, that seems about right that the youths would go to a concert.
Like we don't go to them.
Like I wasn't just at one.
We literally were on at a concert on the same night, except I was seeing like a Celtic rock band and you were seeing Switchfoot.
I was
Not
seeing,
to be confused with Skillet.
not to be confused with Skillet, guys. Welcome back. It's our first episode all over again. Oh, by the way, this is Theology on the Rocks.
Is. And
And
that's Christy and I'm Leah. And if you don't know that by
if you
now,
don't know that by now, I don't know what to tell you.
Christy made fun of me for being Christy, who lives in Florida, let's pin that one right to the board. Made fun of me because I was like, it's getting cold in North Carolina, and I told her the temperature and it was like 55 or 60, and she made fun of me for being a southerner. And you
It was
know, if it
not
got
55 or 60. What
was
you
it
said,
lower than that?
no, it was you, the way the conversation went was that you said it was getting cold, and then I
I
think
mean, I'd still be cold with 65. That's still
Susie
cold for
said
me.
something like, yeah, it's only going to be a high of 76 or something. And that's when I chimed in saying, oh my God, you southerners.
Look, here's the deal. It wasn't 76 yet. Like, it would be like me living my life and someone saying, you know, one day you'll be a millionaire. Well, I'm not a millionaire yet. So this is my life right now.
But no one told me what degrees it was when y'all were complaining about it. I just knew it was going to be in the
Well,
70s.
because so my friend Susie's in Chapel Hill. She's getting her PhD in Chapel Hill. But she's also, let it be known, Scottish by
She
birth.
by birth, but she's really a southerner at
She
this
grew
point.
up in Mississippi. But
Yeah.
yeah, but she's still, I think there's like some genetic, like my people are from Georgia and I don't have any kind of. Although, let it be known, the person who has suffered the most from it getting, quote, cold is Stuart Gibb.
No, it's Stuart Gibb.
Oh, sorry. I don't know if it's going to be last name. Sorry, Stuart. Everybody knows who you are now. They're going to come get you. If someone actually came to get him, he'd be like, "What are you doing? Why are you here?"
Can you imagine somebody decided to
stalk Stuart? Yeah. It would
start stalking Stuart specifically.
It would take a lot of effort, listeners. You'd really have to, like, because you could follow him around and he'd be like, I don't know. Like, you'd have to, like, go and profess affection, like, straight nose to nose for him to be affected by it, I think.
It's true. Bless him. He puts up with so much that there's very little that can faze him at this point.
And so, yeah, give him, right. By a lot, we mean
us.
please stop eating my pumpkin, Kylo. That's the things you say, the things you say. So, guys, today we decided we're going to drink whiskey. We know we've done whiskey before, but I think we both chose different whiskeys.
We did. Go around. I think. Yeah. Actually, I don't really remember what I drank last time, but I'm pretty sure I drank
Jura. And
you did drink Jura.
This one is I got to get it out because as a name. It's a Japanese. So the Japanese actually started doing Scotch whiskey. I don't know if it's still Scotch whiskey, but
it can't be Scotch. Scotch has to be in Scotland.
It does, but I was a part. It's still cask. It's still 46%.
It can still be done the same. It just can't be called Scotch.
Well, I'm calling it Scotch. What's going to happen? Are they going to come for me too?
I mean, they're going to come for us all at some point.
At some point. All right. Well, if they come for me, can you imagine, like, the Scottish coming for someone?
they get really passionate about Scotch, and they're like,
they
nope,
do. But then they nope. saw, like, the effort, and they were like, I'm not going to go over there. So, okay, I'm doing Japanese whiskey, but I will say I got this for about a year. I signed Stuart up for a monthly whiskey thing where he would get a new whiskey every month. It was a very expensive endeavor.
It is, but oh man, do I want to do that. One of my friends is doing it right now, and he was like, this is the greatest thing and you need to do it. And I was like, will you pay for it for me? But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know how much a bottle of whiskey costs. It's about that a month. So there's no hidden fees, really. No. It's just is what it is. But we got this, and it was kind of interesting because I can't remember what it tastes like, but we clearly have drunk some of it. So we have participated. So
I'm drinking a Dalwhinnie, which so my friend Sam and I did this, like, drive around Scotland and go to all the distilleries and thing one summer, which was a fantastic trip. But when we went to Dalwhinnie, one of the for their tasting that they did, one of the scotches they had was at the time they had a Game of Thrones series of scotch. Mm-hmm. And which, like, I'm usually not about the, like,
whatever will get it off the shelves.
it's like usually like, oh, so this isn't going to be like your best one because you're just trying to, like, pick up on this. But it was really good. We both were like, oh man, but it was expensive and that wasn't the one we wanted to buy. And anyway, fast forward like 2 years and I found it on clearance in Colorado and I was like, oh my God. So I got it and it's pretty good. I like it. The Game of Thrones. I don't know which one it is. There's like a bunch of them.
I remember Talisker did something that was, I mean, it wasn't quite that, but it was close. And I just was like, yeah, I'll take it. I'll do whatever. I don't care. Because it's still the whiskey. I mean, you can put freaking Gryffindor on something and it's still the whiskey.
As long as it's good, I'm going to drink it. So.
All right. Well, cheerio.
Cheers.
Cilantro. Whatever cilantro is in Japanese. Cilantro.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I don't know what it is in Japanese. I should ask Amanda. Oh, that's good. It's what I need.
Yeah, for this that is good. I'm remembering now. So I will say one difference between this. The front taste is still there. Like the kind of, you can taste the cask, like, mm-hmm. and the sort of semi-smoky. It doesn't have that hit in the back. Oh. You know? The hit.
Okay, the hit. Yeah, I know. Oh, I mean, I'm having the hit right now.
it does give you the burn on the way down.
It gives you the burn on the way down, but not the hit. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's nice. That's smooth.
Kind of. Yeah, I kind of like
it. Yeah. I like this one. It's got just enough of the smoke, but again, I'm not big on the smoke, on the, like, the Islay kind of scotches, and I like them to be, like, moderately smoky.
I think you'd like this one, actually.
I'll have to try it. You know what I want to do, which is probably wildly outside of my bartending skills, as we have
ever. I was going to say, based on what
based on what happened the past 2 weeks here. But I want to figure out how to, like, you know, when you sometimes you go and you get an old fashioned or you get a whiskey and they smoke it there, like they actually.
Oh, yeah. I've had that.
It's so good. And I want to figure out how to do that.
So they have the little, I've seen it done in like a little glass box, and they had like,
yeah, they have like the ones that you can do it at home. Listeners, if you have tips on how to smoke your whiskey, because I want to do it. I had this fantastic old fashioned at this bar in Colorado Springs once that did that. And I haven't stopped talking about it in like 2 years. So
my friend Sharon got one at our, we have a, I want to say a book club Christmas trip. Mm-hmm. Out every year, but really it's just the most expensive night of my life every year.
Yeah, fair.
It's the night where I look at my credit card and I'm like, I will be $200 less rich at the end of this night. Because it's just like, we always go to these places that have like the tiniest food, mm-hmm. and like the most expensive cocktails. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, as a group, we've decided that that's what makes for a fancy night out.
I mean, it does.
It does, right? Yeah, I can't. But it's hella expensive. It is, yes. So every Christmas, along with, you know, nothing else that you have to buy at Christmas.
Oh no, Christmas is a notoriously cheap time of year, with no obligations.
And the funniest thing about, and you, ladies or gentlemen, if you're a part of a book club, will know that you hang out anyway. Like, yeah. We don't need the book anymore. We don't actually have to read the books or do the books anymore. Like, I had my 40th birthday and pretty much the whole of my book club came. And there was no books that were read on the beach.
Not a single book was read at that beach trip. Do you want to know? So being an avid reader and an English major and et cetera, et cetera. Do you want to know a very...
You would hate our book club.
No, but do you want to know a very weird fact about me?
That you've never been a part of a book club?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, they're really like wine clubs. For adult women,
one time been part of a book club, but it was me and my one friend. It was just the two of us. We wouldn't let anyone else be part of our...
Is that a club or a...
It's not.
Club?
It's just two people reading the same book. And we read all of the Jane Austen novels. And... Okay. Then we also read all of the, a novel per Bronte sister. And so, and then after we would read the novel, we would watch a movie that was based off of that novel, because all of them have a movie. And then we would compare and contrast.
I mean, that kind of sounds delightful.
It was so delightful. But like I said, we would not let anyone else in because we didn't trust anybody else.
Trust anybody to what? To get it or to read it?
We were like, too many times book clubs, and I understand this and validate it now, but we were like, too many times people don't actually do the reading, and then they can't talk about it. I mean, we were really snobby about it, but...
That's one thing I do like about the book club, that is that it's people, some people are people I'd gravitate to.
Yeah.
Like, in the real world.
Yeah.
Then there's some people in it that I wouldn't. Like, not in a million years. And right. It's like, it kind of forces, if you actually do book club, it forces you to like have conversations with people.
Yeah, which is nice. I think it gets you into a place where you can like interact with people. And I think this, again, have never actually...
You don't, you club, don't know.
So I don't know.
I mean, in my grandmaster plan of getting Christy to move to North Carolina, she will be incorporated into my book club.
I will.
Go ahead.
I've been trying to join a book club for ages. It's just... that I don't have time, honestly.
Can I tell you, and you, this is a story Christy has heard, but I'm going to tell the listeners. When I first moved to Charlotte, I had lived in Atlanta for when I was, well, in various parts of Georgia. But I moved to Charlotte, and, like, if you meet me in real life, I'm a pretty, like, approachable person. Like, yeah. I don't really require much maintenance or just, like, let me sleep if we go somewhere.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my only requirement. Like, you know how some people are, like,
don't wake her up. That's the only thing.
Hangry? Yeah. Like, I don't really get hangry. It's more just, like, you know, just let me sleep and everything's okay. But anyway, I would see people out and about. I didn't know anyone in Charlotte. So think about all the cities you potentially could move to and, like, imagine that you maybe know one or two people in those cities. Mm-hmm. I knew nobody in Charlotte, zero people. Yeah. So I was like, oh gosh, I've got to go find some friends. Some
people, yeah.
Because I just moved from Scotland. I was really sad about it. So, and Stuart, my husband, he was my husband, but he was working on his green card, so he wasn't here. So I couldn't date. That was another
thing. You couldn't, no. You...
I couldn't go on terrible dates that ended with me exiting to the bathroom. So
yeah.
I, like, tried all this different stuff. But anyway, I went to a single book club. And it was just a bunch of, like, it was at a brewery. So I thought, oh, this will be cool. And it was down the road from my house. So I could walk. And it was a bunch of blonde women. And I went to, nothing against blonde women, but I went to the, they were just, it was just like an episode of, if you've ever seen Welcome to Plathville, which is the the Plaths, which are like this fundamental Christian group. They're all very blonde. That's what it looked like. It was like some sort of thing. Stepford Wives. And there was just like a bunch of like SUVs in the drive. And I went in and like we started talking, and it was some book like The Hate You Give or something like that. Mm. And I remember this one girl looking at another girl and being like, you know, I think it's just really hard to be black in America. Oh my God. And I remember just sitting there.
Well.
And her voice sounded just like that. And everyone was like,
Oh, God.
And I was sitting right next to a girl, and she just looked at me with this. She was not blonde, but she looked at me with the same horror. And I just was like, I'm going to go get a drink. And then I just got up and left, and I never went back to the table.
So the one book club I did go to here in Florida, because same premise is that I moved here to Florida for the job. And so I knew one person who lives about 45 minutes away from where I moved to. So I needed to make friends. And Leah had always said, like, join a book club. So I did.
Well, it did work for me on like the fourth go round.
You have to give multiple book clubs a chance.
Oh, for sure.
But I went to this one, and it was because I moved to, we already know that Florida is like retirement place.
Oh, I didn't know what you were going to say.
Well, that's B. So A is that everyone here is fairly old. Okay. And then B is that you have to be a little thoughtful about politics in this state. And so
this is the whiskey hitting me. I was just like, I don't know. You just said Florida is, and I just
Florida is
laughing uncontrollably.
Well, and especially too, like, you move from Colorado is not Florida in any way. And
no,
Scotland is also not. And so, like, culturally,
I mean, Charlotte, North Carolina is not.
No. Well, culturally, I've told people this so many times, but the culture shock of moving to Florida was far and away much bigger than moving to Scotland. Like, significantly more culture shock here.
Can't say gay versus can't work the radiator.
And like, people in Scotland were like, oh, are you lost? Let me walk you to your destination. And I was like, why is everyone so nice? And that was really the culture shock I had there.
Versus, how dare you be a teacher?
Versus, terrible. Like, you're, everything about your life is wrong. It was like a lot of older women. And the book had, it was a book, oh my God, I cannot remember what book this was, but it was about an abortion clinic getting shot up. Yeah, it was a very politically charged book, and so I was kind of like, oh, okay, this is the book we're reading. And
did someone say it must be so hard being pregnant?
Well, there was the conversation almost immediately obviously turned into not even revolving around abortion or being either pro-choice or anti-abortion, but it was just well, I'm a Republican and I'm a nice person. And I was just sitting there oh dear God, not that there are zero nice Republicans, but that was the whole of this book club where I was solidly 10 years younger than everybody else, if not more. And I was just I'm never going to make any friends in this state, but I did. I made friends. They were just elsewhere.
My granddad always used to say, if you have to say what you are repeatedly to people, then you probably are not what you are. Oh, for sure. I thought that was an interesting, or that there's something else going on.
I mean, the people who are constantly telling you how cool they are not actually cool.
Sorry, Christy. I know I do that.
I mean, Leah and I are definitely not. We are the coolest people you will ever meet, guys. If you're coming to Clear Camp, just know.
I'm currently drinking this whiskey out of It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. Because I found it at TJ Maxx, so I got really excited.
This is the greatest. I love that so much. Oh,
God. Speaking of beer camp, guys, we've got our hot sauce stuff ready. We need your questions, so send in some questions and we'll put them in the bucket, which inevitably will be a Halloween cauldron of some sort that I bring.
Some kind of Halloween cauldron. Yeah, send us your questions. I know
they can be funny or theology or religion.
It can be anything. We are literally open to any question. We're just going to pull them out of the bucket.
Yeah.
We're going to eat this horrible sauce and then we're going to answer your questions. It's going to be an adventure.
I feel like Christy's not going to be my friend anymore.
neither of us are going to be alive.
This is the Survivor book club, what I'm making you do.
Let me just tell you is that if I ever was hoping to still be attractive and land a man, it's not going to be after this when I'm crying and snotting everywhere because these hot wings are killing me.
We have to get all our supplies. So we need water. Do you like milk? Do you drink milk?
We had this combo. We had a conversation. I do drink milk. We did. I'm a weirdo.
You're a weirdo.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to get it just for this.
Do we need bread? Is bread something that helps? I don't know. I've not done this.
I don't think I've seen them have. I mean, I'm sure it can't hurt.
I'm just trying to think of things that will make my mouth less angry.
I think that they usually have milk and they have water, which never helps.
Water does and not maybe, help now.
I'm sure we'll have a beer because it's beer camp, but yeah, I don't know that will help either. But.
I really informally announced it on the beer camp discussion thing. And everyone was excited. Well, the people who've seen it so far were excited.
Yay.
And said, beer camp is leveling up this year. And I was like, I think you're expecting too much out of what I'm going to be able to do.
I mean, I think it was a brilliant idea.
It is.
But now that I think that I actually have to do it.
You actually have to eat these things.
I feel like I should be a PR person for someone else as opposed to my, I don't want to be PR manager for myself.
Right? You did this to yourself as well. It's not just me.
I know. I know. And I wouldn't wouldn't that be hilarious? It would be such a move of an older child if I was like, oh, God. Christy, you have to do it by yourself.
It would be such an older child, younger child situation.
I'd be like, I just want to watch. I'll do the filming, Christy. That's how I frame it.
And, oh, man. It would be bad. That's how I wound up with my first tattoo. So there you go.
That's perfect. That's amazing. You know what? You have to come with me when I decide what I want for my first tattoo.
Are you ever going to get a first tattoo? I will absolutely come and I'll get one with you. I've been genuinely thinking about going to get a Friday the 13th tattoo on Friday because
Oh yeah.
I have two Friday the 13th tattoos.
which are very good. They're historically can be hit or miss, but
I got real lucky.
Hers are actually, and I'm not just saying that because I'm an oldest child and I would tell her, they are actually they are actually really nice.
My first one that I got, I have gotten complimented on so frequently. It's everybody's favorite tattoo.
Your paper airplane is my favorite.
It's the favorite tattoo. People, just strangers, will stop me and be like, oh my god, and they'll be like, mm-hmm. what does it mean? And I always tell them it means it was $25.
I was gonna say, I'm not scared of tattoos, I just, like, I'm so me and a control freak that my husband, if you guys ever see him, is he's covered. He's got more than Christy. He
does have more than me.
He's tatted all the way. But, like, so it's not about, like, any moral compass. It's simply I'm a psycho.
He's a tattooed person, and I'm a person who has tattoos. And he has gone over it, and I have not yet. But,
well, he also, I think he gets, there's some always coming through the door right now. We should ask him. But I think he gets sort of adrenaline, some sort of high from the tattoo.
Absolutely. You absolutely do. You would too if you ever got one. But
yeah, there's one that I wanted to get that I've thought about getting, that is the Shakespeare quote. Did you see? Because my friend Meg, who've talked about before, actually got me some stickers to try to see if I would actually like the tattoo in a bunch of different fonts. And it's you're the literature person, but it's the quote that says, there's more on heaven and earth that's in your philosophy. Horatio?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I would take out the Horatio because I don't really care. But I like the idea that there's more in heaven and earth than you can think of.
You don't have to put who it's attributed to. It's not like where you have to say.
I care nothing for Horatio, Christy. He does not matter. He doesn't matter.
Horatio is not a person I would want tattooed on me either. So you're okay.
Yeah. But I liked that because I thought it fit very well with the theology. Yeah. But yeah,
I really like that. That's a great idea. Yeah. Leah, that's a simple, you can get that. We'll do it. We'll go. We'll get your tattoo. It's going
to
be exciting.
Stuart has to go too. Stuart, you just walked in the door. You can speak. What is your main reasoning in two sentences or maybe three about why you get tattoos? Because they mean something to me.
Or a reminder to remember something.
That stays.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's generally it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that mine would fit under that. And
I think
Christy has, I will say, no offense to Stuart, although Stuart has a fleur-de-lis, which is my favorite, that would be tied for your your woman.
My Glasgow girl.
Those are two faves of mine.
Yeah, no, my Glasgow girl is probably, I mean, objectively the best tattoo I have.
We will put all these up on the, I mean, if Christy and Stuart consent to it, we can put them up on the thing. And I will put up the quote without Horatio, maybe, if I can find it on the internet.
It's not my most sentimental tattoo, so, like, it's hard for me to be like, this is my favorite tattoo, but it is objectively my best tattoo, because it's just really beautiful. She did a great
job. It's very beautiful, yeah.
And it's got the Charles Rennie Macintosh flowers, the roses, so... hey, but we are drinking whiskey because today
I knew you were gonna segue. I was like,
it's been half an hour. We've got it.
I know. I'm not putting it off. Don't worry.
No, it's we're drinking whiskey because today we're gonna have a serious chat, and so that's needed serious whiskey.
We thought this was like, imagine us with pipes, even though we don't smoke.
We don't smoke pipes, but imagine that we had them and we were wearing our tweed.
And we're in front of a fireplace.
Yes, there's a crackling fireplace.
Also, even though it's hotter than hell in both of the places we are.
If I was near a fireplace right now, I would spontaneously combust.
But just imagine with your mind's eye.
Imagine, come with us to this nice... We're in a nice little wee pub in Glasgow. We've got a cracking fire. We've got our whiskey and our pipes, and we're going to have a good chat. So
I have my GLA shirt on. Mm-hmm. I'm making fun of the LA shirt for Glasgow. Also, yeah, I mean, and maybe you live in a cool place, and if so, mm-hmm. turn that fire on. Get your straight liquor of choice out. Yep.
Get your serious alcohol out and join us for today's serious chat. As y'all have heard, some devastating things are happening around the world, and being religion profs and also specifically people who deal with these kinds of issues in our theology, we figured we should probably speak a little bit about some of the stuff kind of relating to it. But I will kind of make the disclaimer that neither of us are experts in geopolitics. And we're certainly not experts in the very difficult history of both Jewish people and Palestine itself. And we have friends who are much more capable to speak to those, but we aren't organized enough to get them on right now.
Well, my friend and I will say specifically Sharon, I hope what I'm going to, Sharon is a good friend of mine. She's Jewish, and I'm going to try to get her to listen to the podcast and see if she maybe will come on next week. And no pressure, Sharon, if you're listening, and maybe comment on it. Cause yeah. I'd actually really like to hear her opinion on it. She's not a Jewish studies scholar. So I think it would be really interesting just to get someone's opinion. That's, yeah. You know, I mean, just living the life. So yeah. I mean, in the US, I should say, but
average, US Jewish person as experiencing everything that's going down. So
yeah. Because we don't like to speak about, I mean, Christy said that we should talk about it, and I will give her credit for that, because I was just like, oh gosh, I don't know, you know, because it's difficult when you don't have someone. Because I do so much ethnography, I always feel a little bit hesitant to talk about stuff when you don't have someone who is a part of that community here, but I do think it would be amiss to not
chat about it. As academics, we tend to shy away from things that we aren't specifically dealing with, except for that there are certain things related to this issue that you and I are scholars in. And so
that's true. Yep.
Which is why we both felt like, yeah, this actually is something that we are supposed to talk about, especially given not that we're prestigious, but that we do teach and interact
with people. We are public.
So
and also that we've been seeing so much trash on the internet.
So yeah, to firstly, let's just start out with like the first disclaimer, or not even disclaimer, but statement that Judaism is a widely diverse, very complex theology, very complex group of people who are not a monolith. And to talk about Judaism is not like a synonym for Israel. Israel is not a synonym for Judaism. They are not the same thing. And so talking about or criticizing Israel does not immediately make you an anti-Semite, because they aren't the exact same things. That has to be stated, I think, up front, because a lot of people do start to get really concerned about that.
I have two disclaimers to follow up on that. One is that I would say violence in all of its forms is evil. I don't have any place for it.
Yeah.
And I stand by that statement. And even if it's Augustine, what was it, Augustine throwing himself on the steps or something? Yeah. I'm not into that either. So.
Yeah, no, violence is never, you don't get good things out of violent things.
I know some people are like, well, what about those tattoos you were talking about? That's kind of violent. You get a good thing out of that. Okay, we can nuance that to death.
Yes.
We can go for it. But when I'm talking to, I guess when I'm talking about things like, you know, kidnapping and killing, generally assaults of various persuasions, you know, that's not
and I think too, on top of that, like, even in the kind of more official setup of war, war should always be something that is grieved, not celebrated.
100%. I taught just war. I taught a class called Religion, Violence, and Peacebuilding, which was actually a really great class to teach. Yeah. And it looked at the ways that religion justified peacebuilding and violence. But one of the parts that we looked at was the way Christianity justified just war. And keep in mind, I will say this, I am a huge supporter of the troops. Christy will tell you, in some ways, lean quite heavily, I would say, Republican when it comes to the troops. But all of my, my uncle's a Marine. All of my family fought.
All of my family served.
But I feel greatly saddened, especially, I'm just going to say this is my granddad on my dad's side actually talked a lot about being in Korea and how much it affected his mental health. And so I think, you know, I can't say that it, even that kind of violence where we celebrate the troops and we always talk about their sacrifice. Thank you for your service or thank you for your sacrifice. And it is a sacrifice, I think, you know, like my grandparents, both sides were not the same as when they left. And I think, you know, it's tough. So that's one thing I would say. Oh, go ahead.
It's an important point to say that being grateful for people who have done that or acknowledging the sacrifices still does not mean that you're not grieving. And actually you should be grieving it even more because it is a person that you're connected to. War is something you should always grieve and not celebrate, regardless. Yep. And even if the war seems just, even if there's an outcome that you deem positive from it, it is still a horrible thing. And there are still human beings that were made in the image of God that are dying and suffering in these violent times. And we have to grieve those things or we are rejecting that truth very clearly. So
I agree. And my next one is easier. It's the idea that governments or organizations do not represent whole nations of people.
Correct.
So the idea that Netanyahu on the Israeli side or even the quite conservative government that's in Israel at the moment, you know, there were Israelis protesting that government.
Yeah, there have been mass protests in Israel for quite some time about their government. So for sure we should not equate.
And Hamas is not Palestine.
No, and Hamas is not even an elected government for Palestine. So again, we don't want to equate those things. And this kind of nuance is really, really important.
Yeah, because imagine like whenever, I don't know, whoever, based on your political persuasion, let's say when Donald Trump was elected, or even let's say Obama was elected.
Yeah.
If you felt grief or sadness or this person doesn't represent me or, you know, what they're doing does in no way reflect my viewpoint, that's also what other people are dealing with. And so to put them across the board as being underneath this umbrella is just, it's just not very accurate because, you know, I saw someone say, well, 53% of Palestinians agreed with Hamas in like 2015 or something, or that they supported Hamas or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, how many percentages of Americans agreed with, you know, Donald Trump? And yet there was a lot of protests about the stuff that he was doing, or indeed Obama. I mean,
because when I was in undergrad, I went to China for a little school trip. And at one point we were in a cabin.
That's a pretty big school trip.
It was just a little school trip.
Over to China.
A little jaunt to China. It was the longest flight of my life.
Yep.
But we were in a cab headed back to our hotel. And our cab driver was one of the few people there that we encountered that did speak a little bit of English. And mm-hmm. the only thing he said to us was George Bush. And we were like, oh, yeah. And he goes, America make war. And we were like, oh, God, what do we do? So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have to be these kind of like, you don't have to be like, oh, yes, I totally support this thing that this president did, or I totally hate this other president or whatever. Like, being associated with the problems of your country is not generally who you are as a person. And so we don't want to go ahead and do that to other people either, you know, and say,
and you may say, oh, they're doing all this nuance because it's a difficult conversation. And I would say, yes, that's correct. Because yeah. a lot of times when you put something up on Facebook or like, you know, I saw something, I've mentioned Kylie Jenner twice in this podcast, which is upsetting, but that she
is not the usual podcast.
It's not right. She put up something and then immediately took it down or something. Yeah. And it was like, well, you know, maybe that's not the platform.
Yeah.
Discussions it, about.
It is a so much larger conversation to have than we can put on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or what have you. And there are some posts that go up that seem nicer and some that seem worse. And, but like at the end of the day, this is just, it's a difficult conversation for sure. And it's an important conversation also, because we as humans have to figure out how to both understand when stuff is happening outside of our sphere, and understand how to grieve it and understand how to properly like think about it, especially in line with our belief system, our worldview. Like, what does it mean to say that you are supportive of one thing or another if you don't fully understand what's going on with the thing, you know?
Yeah, and we aren't even experts in it, but no. People, I think, keep asking us to, well, at least I've been asked for my opinion on it. And, you know, at the minute, I just feel such overwhelming sadness.
Yeah.
And that's not an excuse not to say something at all. But, you know, it is one of those things where it's funny that we had just talked about taking that visitation to the Middle East, because I did go to Palestine and I did go to Israel, you know.
Yeah.
And that was apart from, you know, the whole sort of pilgrimage aspect, is that I got to see the real disparity that existed between the two spaces, mm-hmm. and, you know, the walls that surround and that separate. And it reminded me a lot of Northern Ireland, which I do feel more like I can talk about as an expert, but like, they have walls that separate, and, you know, the lines to get in to either place are so long. And there's people who live in Israel that consider themselves Palestinian, and there's people that live in Palestine that consider themselves Israeli, and they have family on either side.
Mm-hmm.
But you've just set up this, and I say you, but I mean, you know, the governments throughout history have set up these arbitrary borders mm-hmm. that don't reflect humanity. And I think that's the thing that gets me, is this is a political issue.
It is, yeah.
And it's exacerbated by religion and nationalism. And it's just, I don't know. It's one of those things where you can just see, and honestly, propaganda. It's,
absolutely.
You know, like the propaganda of it all and villainizing the other person.
Yeah. Well, and we've been seeing that all week, as we've been seeing people post various things, that the kind of propaganda that's put up, the ways that various sources have led us to agree with one side or the other, or to say horrible things like that, you know, a whole group of humanity should be bombed out of existence or decimated just because they happen to live in that place. Those kinds of things are terrible things to think, but again, it's that kind of, we've leaned so far into these news sources and these ideas that we've forgotten that kind of at the end of the day, we're still talking about people and we're still talking about complicated situations that people are trying to live in.
And the people who bought into the propaganda, who are leading these sort of, and so far, at least from my perspective, it seems like Hamas has been the aggressor at this stage. But like, I mean, and you can correct me because I mean, I listen. But what I want to say beside that is, it's not going to end that way.
No.
And it's that's the thing, is that people are like, well, Hamas is the aggressor and they started it. Well,
they didn't really.
I'm not sure that they started this round. Yeah.
They certainly did this most recent kind of big attack, which, so admittedly, I have only been kind of vaguely aware of the history up until all of this happened. And so one of the things that I did this week was to listen to a couple of Palestinians and Israelis talk about the situation. And then I also got the book called, it is called 100 Years of War on Palestine, by Rashid Khalidi. And it is, yeah, the 100 Years War on Palestine, which we'll also put up in the notes here. But there's a whole bunch of sources and books out there that can help us understand this better. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when a lot of these kind of political situations come up, the situation itself is political, and these governments are doing things, and they often will use religion to support themselves or to further their objectives or their propaganda. And that is happening to a pretty large scale with this, because of the incredible amount of religious aspect in that part of the world. And also because of what all of it's coming out of. So essentially, and again, this is definitely not my field of expertise, but essentially that with the kind of making of a nation of Israel and taking over what was Palestine, that this has a lot to do with both the Holocaust and needing a place, and I'm saying this way on purpose, but to put Jewish people, because Jewish people had been displaced, but nobody actually wanted them because anti-Semitism was still very rampant everywhere. Yeah,
and they probably didn't want to live.
I'm sure they didn't really live in those didn't places. Feel
I mean, they probably wanted to live in their homelands, but didn't feel like comfortable.
Yeah, like there's
that sort of stuff was so
there's obviously prevalent. Complicated emotions there.
Yeah. You're like looking around like, this is maybe not.
But also still countries were not taking, like the U.S. still didn't want to take them. You know, it wasn't like people were just like, oh my God, we've been terrible to Jewish people all of these years. Now we welcome you with open arms. It was still bad, you know?
Right.
And so they're like, let's put them in Israel because that makes sense. And then also we like kind of simultaneously have the invention of this type of Christian evangelical theology called dispensationalism, and that kind of says that in order to usher in the end of the world, we have to have a nation of Israel. And so,
isn't that Christian Zionism? Is that the same thing?
I think so. I'm much more familiar with Darby. So it was John Nelson Darby is the one who came up with dispensationalism. And basically said, and this is horrible and not like, if you're a biblical scholar, it's laughable. And if you're a theologian, it's like, why would you do this? But, says basically that God was like, this Jewish experiment is going badly. Let me replace them with Gentiles. And then at the end of the world, I'm going to take all of the Christians out of the world through the rapture, and then I'm going to go back and like torture the Jewish people into me again. This is, I mean, it's really terrible. Like, this is the reaction we should all have. But that is what got pushed. And then it kind of takes off. And then we get things like the Left Behind series. And and so we have a country currently that is really kind of, and I think, again, this is mostly out of not ill intent, but a place of ignorance in terms of what we understand in the Bible and theology, and also just not being assholes. But like,
technically speaking,
like, we shouldn't want God to be like, I know I was all about the Jewish people, but now I'm going to be all about the Christians. And then I'm going to like take the Christians out of the world and do some horrible stuff. And that'll make the Jewish people follow me again. Like, it's just a weird,
is this some revelation interpretation?
Yes. Yeah,
figured.
That whole like pre-millennial, we all get raptured, which just isn't in the Bible. And then, I mean, did you ever read the Left Behind series?
Certainly did.
That shit wrecked me when I was a kid. I was so
super scary.
It was like, because I remember I had a bunch of friends who weren't Christians, and I remember telling my mom, I was like, I don't like any of this, and I don't really like that God would do this to people.
That's fair.
Appropriate reaction.
I think that's totally fair. My parents were not like in that world, so I think when I read it, they were like, "What is that about?" And I was like, "Blah blah blah," and they were like, "Oh,"
they were like, "That sounds horrible.
That sounds really bad."
So that is certainly playing.
In the Baptist world, we had a lot of hell. The rapture was a little less
emphasized.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely playing a part of this as well. There's obviously Jewish Zionism, which is part of this. And then again, obviously we do have fundamental aspects of Islam playing into this as well. So there are religious aspects that are playing into all of this going on, but when we're looking at it in reality, it's the use and the abuse of these religions in order to further the governments that they're trying to do.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I learned when I went to Northern Ireland is I kept talking about Catholics and Protestants. And I remember I had a very important leader, a political leader in Northern Ireland, who told me off the record, this is not about religion. This is about being British or being Irish.
Right.
Like, and I thought that was really interesting because I was just sitting there being like, the Catholics and the Protestants and the Catholics and the Protestants. Yeah. And this person was like,
it's not really that.
That's not what the issue is.
Yeah.
It doesn't help the issue.
Yeah. Especially because of how it gets twisted and people are really deeply connected to their beliefs. And, you know, it's an important, I mean, this is how it is for us. These beliefs are important to us. And so
they can be weaponized.
They can be weaponized against you, and they can be twisted and manipulated against you and against other people. And that's what we see happen with a lot of religions and a lot of governments. It's just also part of this. So
do you know how many people have died so far? Like,
I have not looked at the most recent count, but
it's interesting because I looked at Israel Palestine. Just, we talked about my thesis very briefly again. Northern Ireland is my area of expertise, but I did look at it in South Africa, and it was interesting because I like looking at the history and sort of tracking, because I think I'm secretly into stats, but I don't want to admit it. and looking at stuff. And I remember someone sent me a message because I was really busy when all of this started the morning of, and they were like, how bad do you think this is? And I started looking at it very cursory. And as I looked at it, I was like, oh no.
Yeah. It's very bad.
It's very bad.
Bad. I think especially bad because as we know, because of how the setup is, the Gaza Strip is kind of essentially an open air prison that Israel is controlling and has cut off water and food and electricity. And so it's just going to continue to get worse. And I think that, ultimately this is where, you know, my concern is that this type of fighting is a type of fighting that is really a loss of humanity. This isn't even the kind of war that we can say, oh, you know, maybe it's just war or something, that, because it's not following the rules of engagement, essentially. There's a million children in Gaza that are going to be affected, and this is not how any of this should be done.
Solidifying the view that the Israelis have of the Palestinians, which is that they're these terrible terrorists who, and right now, you know, that Hamas group is being terrible terrorists and absolutely murdering and killing. And, you know, if the reports are correct that I'm saying, doing unspeakable things to people. And it's like, none of this is none of this is going to lead to the result.
Because doing this isn't going to make Hamas want to stop either. It's going to punish innocent Palestinians.
It's already punishing Israelis. And it's
punishing Israelis. I mean, everybody loses in this scenario. And it doesn't mean, because one of the things I think that I have, and I understand where this is coming from, is the idea of if the oppressed people group, which would here be the Palestinians, are fighting back, can we understand or justify that? And I'm like, but they're not the ones fighting back. Yep. And they're the ones that are suffering. And so this isn't going to lead to the freedom of Palestine or the Gaza Strip. It's not going to lead to any of that. And what we need to do mostly is to kind of try to end the fighting. We need, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, and that's the same, like, in the world that I know, is when I first moved to Belfast, like the week I moved there, there was an attack from the Provisional IRA, which is like a new group from the IRA, Irish Republican Army, which is a paramilitary group, basically. And they had killed a police officer and a sort of soldier, basically, in these kind of random attacks. Probably not random, but they seemed random.
Right.
And I looked at that as I moved there, having studied what I did, and I thought to myself, and again, nothing on the scale of what's happening now, but I thought to myself, what did you think was going to happen?
Right. Yeah. This is like, there's nothing about this is going to end well.
Like, what did you think that those, and you could be like, well, we're mad and we want to make sure our presence is still known. And I heard a lot of that rhetoric when I was over there, like, they need to know that we're still here and we're still fighting and all of that. Mm-hmm. But all it did was cause a lot of crackdown on certain groups that had nothing to do with that paramilitary group. And it's like, so you're making it harder for the people who actually are living here.
Yeah.
I think
that's why it's so important to separate the people from the perpetrators, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I've seen comparisons to other pushbacks, like the Haitian Revolution. And I feel like, again, certainly what we need to think about is that who is it that's doing this? And are they representative of those people? And yes, if oppressed people are pushing back, and sometimes that is going to happen violently because it is this world, we can certainly say that they have a right to push back and to try to defend themselves or to free themselves from that oppression. But if it's not them doing it, and it's another group who is essentially doing this to continue the oppression of those people and more oppression on other people, which is what we know Hamas is trying.
And maybe having been to Palestine, I mean, it's not great over there. And I think we can, again, I appreciated you saying to criticize Israel is not to be anti-Semitic. It's like, you know, it's the government. I would criticize the government 100%. Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's different, but like it's dismal. And I think like maybe they were fed up. Maybe, you know, I just don't know that it's going to end at all the way. But maybe you just reach the end point and you're just like, I can't. But then is that the group that you want to represent you? I don't believe that's the group they want.
No. Well, I think there
has to be other players in this. Like, yeah. I know there's like conspiracy theories now.
So many conspiracy theories
about like Russia. And I mean, I'm not saying these aren't, or it's always Russia, right? Right. it's always Russia. But like other countries, Egypt, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then like America with Israel and whatever, and Iran. And it's just like, it gets to the point where I'm like, oh gosh, how do we stop this before more people die?
Well, and that's, yeah, I think that's what you and I are both saying, is that what we feel is the desire, the hope, the end goal is that we could stop the fighting before it escalates anymore, because this isn't a productive fight. This isn't the Haitian Revolution.
No, people are going to die. People are going to die.
And nothing is going to be resolved from that, other than
there is not going to be justice for the Israeli people who have passed away, or any other nationality. Honestly, there's not going to be any justice.
There's not going to be any justice. No.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, but I don't think that there's going to be justice for those people.
Again, my fear, the things that I think are likely to happen that I hate, is twofold. One is that more horrible things happen to the Palestinians, but also that, as we know, with these things, the rise in anti-Semitism around the world is
incredible.
And so, which is again why we keep saying Judaism is not the Israeli government.
Correct.
But because this is just going to keep, because people are not doing this because they like really love Jewish people. None of this is happening. Again, even in the States, a lot of the motivation that people have for this is this idea of bringing about the rapture. It's nothing to do with Jewish people. And so all of our Jewish friends and neighbors here are going to receive a lot of hate or pushback, especially if they are trying to speak out about this or trying to say things, you know,
I've not even known what to say.
I
barely know what to say on this podcast, because you see so many news reports and it's just like, and I don't even know what, that's why I was like, how many people have died? Is Hamas the aggressor?
Yeah.
Have the Israelis retaliated? Because we get such a like,
there's so much bad information and there's so much propaganda, and it's really hard sometimes to sort it out, especially if it isn't your full-time job to try to sort it out.
No, that's right. And I think that's why I do history, because I'm like, I can talk about things
currently happening. Yeah.
Correct. There is a book that I can read and I can tell you about, and that's my own fault, but it's like, sometimes it's really difficult for me as a human to work through critically, which I do think you and I are both critically analytic people.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to figure out like, okay, I don't listen to, you know, don't listen to this and don't listen to that. Okay. Well, maybe I'll listen to it all. I still don't know what's going on. Yeah. That's troubling. I think
it is. It's so troubling because I have seen so many I could be describing this in 17 different ways right now based on all the stuff I've seen, and some stuff that has been like disproven, some stuff that comes out, some stuff that just feels like constant, again, conspiracy theories, except that as much as I work not to buy into things, sometimes it sounds very realistic. And so, yeah, it's just really, really hard to know what is going on. But at the end of the day, I think, again, what you and I both want to emphasize is that these things are tragic, that we need to grieve for all of the people that are being harmed and
And I would wish these leaders would get together with maybe whiskey in front of a fire. Yeah. And just do what we're doing. Yeah. And I know that sounds crazy, but like that actually has happened in certain places I've studied. Is people just, I remember there was something, I cannot be specific about this at all, but there was a group of people who were in this meeting room and it was not going anywhere. And someone was like, can we just go to the pub?
The pub is just a wonderful place to solve problems.
And just like chat the way we're chatting and just say, look, I don't know everything. I don't want to offend people, but you know what I don't want is for more tragedy. Yeah. Christy, I tell you the one thing I did here today, I was driving around like a maniac today and I heard an NPR report and it was a woman and I tried to memorize their names, but I couldn't because my brain is so overwhelmed. Yeah. But it was an Israeli mom and her daughter had been kidnapped and she'd gone to NPR and she was talking about it. And they're talking about trying to track phones, but her phone had showed up somewhere else and her daughter wasn't there. And just the sheer, like, I'm a minister and I worked in chaplaincy for a long time, but I haven't heard, I haven't heard such anguish. Mm-hmm. Like,
so much anguish. Yeah.
Her daughter's lost. And she was saying, if you can hear me, please just hold on. Please, whatever's happening to you, just stay with us and like, please. And I'm going to say there's probably 0 to 2% chance her daughter's listening to NPR wherever she is. And I don't mean that sarcastically.
Yeah, probably not. But
it's just like, it was one of those things where I just was like, and her daughter's 20. And I was like, this is what I actually did my PhD for, was so that I would never have to hear, I mean, in an idealized world, never have to hear another mother, I don't care where you live or what side you're on, sound like that. Because it just broke my heart. I cried in the car. Yeah. And I don't cry. I'm not a cry.
Yeah.
But it just, she was just so broken.
It's such a horrific, the whole thing is so horrific. I mean, I was teaching last week, and talked a lot about the ways that religion is used and abused by governments, and then working through Zoroastrianism this week, and which is
as you do
this tiny little religion. And I was talking about how Zoroastrianism kind of introduces this concept of dualism, so that there's good stuff and bad stuff in the world. And I said this in one of my classes, but I was like, you know, this is how the Western world tends to think, and that we have good guys and we have bad guys. And sometimes there's a situation where there's just like a lot of bad.
Yep.
And this feels like that, you know, like.
And unfortunately, the bad guys are in charge.
Yeah, there's just so much bad happening, and there are only bad guys that are doing things, and all of the good guys are the ones that are dying. And that is a horrible thing, because there's nothing that kind of gives you more like, okay, it's going to be okay because we can do this or that. Like it feels so futile to think about the whole thing. And
this is one of the things that I saw is like the bad guys, if you want to call them that, but the people who are in charge, because of things that happen like this, because I mean, good Lord willing, this isn't going to wipe out the whole of Israel Palestine. I mean, I genuinely hope it doesn't. I don't think it will, but what it does is it, you know, I saw this in Northern Ireland, is it solidifies sides.
Yeah.
And the government will, and the political parties who are trying to get their own stuff through. And by the way, let me tell you, there are good political people out there. I'm not saying everybody, but there are some that are working selfishly.
Yeah.
But this solidifies for generations. That's the thing that kills me. Solidifies that these people are the enemy and they are to be feared, you know, and that they are the bad guys, you know, and we are the good guys. And that's across a multitude of different conflicts. But like, you can't, I find those sort of things much harder to untangle, because you'll have kids who will not remember this, or were not born during this conflict in whatever way it pans out. But they will know who the bad guy is. They will know
about this. Yeah, and they will have that kind of solidified. Well, and I think, too, because I've seen this kind of popping up, which I think is actually not a great way to frame this at all. But I've seen a lot of people saying things like, this is Israel's 9/11. And all that does for me is make me grieve even more because of all of, I mean, 9/11 did not do anything good in the world either.
No.
Like, our,
it's you know, solidified. Like it solidified. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. It solidified a hate and it solidified a like 20 plus year war.
Yep.
And that isn't something that we want at all again to happen. We're real anti-violence here.
Yeah, we are. I think we're coming across as whiskey drinking hippies right now.
We really are. I like, if there's one thing we want y'all to take away from it, is that we want everyone to be safe and healthy and to be loved and to,
but also to be able to talk about things in a multifaceted way. And it's just like I remember one thing I do remember was the Oslo agreements, and they talked about that before, and like these sort of things that, you know, when we, if you don't know about the Oslo agreements, you can go look it up. It's just, I can't go, it's too much whiskey it's to go much. Into it right now. And we're already at like 70 minutes. I can't go into it. But anyway, there were attempts throughout Israel-Palestine's history to kind of work out the issues. But I think one of the things is that when we have opportunities to actually talk and be diplomatic, and also who we actually put in charge of, mm-hmm. you know, when these presidents come in and they're like, oh, the convoy, whoever is our ambassador to the Middle East or our ambassador to blah, blah, blah. Make sure to note who those people are, because actually it is really important.
It is really important.
One of the things, the Good Friday Agreement, which actually was, I personally think as a person who is not from Northern Ireland, was an okay agreement as it goes for Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, one of the,
I would agree as well.
The people who worked through that was the American ambassador to Ireland. And it's like, it doesn't have to be an American. Trust me. That's not important. But like,
we're not especially great at that, but
no, but we had a good relationship and with both those countries. And in that case, it worked out, you know, and, but I mean, there was many, 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 many other people. I don't want to emphasize that person was the only one. John Major, I think it was. No, not John Major. That's a lie. Take that out.
Stuart, take it out.
That was a British prime minister.
I don't know if you could tell, but we have no editor.
That was a British prime minister. That is wrong, wrong, wrong. Anyway, there was some guy there. I'm going to figure out later and I'll tell y'all tomorrow. Tell y'all next week. Anyway, but God, this whiskey. But anyway, so, but yeah, so it did. People, but it took a long time talking, and I think
you've got to be willing to sit down and talk,
hash it out,
and I think too, like even for those of us who aren't politicians, sitting down and hashing this out, talking through what's going on, talking through why we have certain feelings or what kinds of things we're hearing or whatever, is good. It's good for us to do this. It's important that we think about what's going on in the world outside of ourselves and outside of what affects our day to days, and that we talk about those things with people.
Because I remember teaching about Al-Qaeda and, you know, talking about Afghanistan and talking about Russia, mm-hmm. and like, you know, a lot of the people that I would teach were like, oh, well, 9/11, it just happened, they attacked. And I'm like, there's a history. This is why I like history.
There's a
like,
huge history. Yeah.
There's a huge history.
And there's a huge history here too. This isn't really out of the blue mm-hmm. attack.
No. And the fact that, honestly, this, it's not, I'm not surprised. I mean, and I want to be surprised. I'm surprised at some bits of it, but like, you know.
No, not surprised. Surprised.
Right. And I mean, I'm not saying that I'm just cynical, although I am. Clearly, listeners, you know this at this age, but like, it'd be different if just like, I don't know. Who was like Portugal just all of a sudden was like, ah, we're gonna fight each other. Like, that would surprise me.
That would surprise me. Yeah, this is
but like, yeah.
yeah, well, yeah. And you know, one of the people I listened to an interview on the BBC was the Palestinian ambassador to Britain, and I really appreciated his interview. He was very well spoken. He was clearly surprising and shocking the person interviewing him, because that man wanted him to stop talking. But it's a bit of a contentious interview. But because the interviewer kept saying, "Do you condemn the attack that Hamas did?" And which at some point the guy, the ambassador, had to be like, of course I think it's bad, but it's actually not the point. Like, the point of this conversation, this is one thing that's happened in a much larger conversation, and I kind of appreciated the perspective on that, you know.
You have to do both.
It would be wrong for us to look at this as if it was a surprise, as if it was out of nowhere. And again, I think that's something that I fully did this when 9/11 did happen, partly because I was 18 and I didn't know. When my mom called me to be like, I was a freshman in college. My mom called me and was like, somebody has just flew a plane into the World Trade Center. My response was to say to her, where is the World Trade Center?
Oh my gosh.
She was like, Christy, we were literally there last year. You toured it. I was like, what? So, like, that's who I was as an 18-year-old. But, like, I thought I was out of nowhere. I was like, what in the world has happened? And not putting it into context of the larger picture was a flaw in my understanding of the event. So we need to make sure we're putting it into that big picture. But
I mean, we're not being teachers.
It doesn't mean like obviously it was a horrible, horrible thing that happened. And again, I think that it's important to say, like, I and you both hate the thing that happened, that Hamas did. But
they did it and it was awful.
And it was awful.
And violence, like, is evil. And I feel
and like, full stop. You know, like,
yeah, I'm not, that's it.
That's it. But also, that doesn't mean that I think it's okay to bomb Palestine.
No. Like, no. But that's where you stop and you say, we're talking about different phases, like, of peace building, is that you're talking about, okay, we talk about the things that happen. And we, again, not to go back to my thesis, but the truth of the situation and justice, if we can get it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we look to the past, and we look for the truth and justice in the past, if it's possible to get that.
Yep.
And then we look to the future, where hopefully there can be repentance or forgiveness. Maybe there can't be, but maybe there can be a negotiation of some sorts. And just bombing the shit out of each other is not that.
It's not that. And
it's just going to cause, like, we're gonna look on our TVs again. But I think it's one of those things that it's easier. I think in some ways, I mean, not easier for the people who do it, but I would think if I was a person dropping bombs, but I think maybe it's quicker to do that, and people can get on there and say, oh, we got them, and it's done, and the bad guy's done. And it's like, okay, so just a bunch of people are dead.
Right. Oh my God. So I was teaching Romeo and Juliet.
That's in your religion repertoire.
I also teach humanities.
I do as well. So I can't say anything.
So in my humanities class, what we're doing, we go through the different fields of the humanities. But what I'm doing this semester is to weave Romeo and Juliet throughout the whole semester. So I made my students read the play, and it's such an interesting play to read as an adult and to come at it from a totally different perspective than I did when Leonardo DiCaprio was just like staring dreamily at my screen.
Yes. Hats off to Baz Luhrmann.
Right. Oh, best Romeo and Juliet there is. But one of the things that Romeo and Juliet is about powerful people destroying each other and the horrific ways that powerful people try to stay powerful. Yep. Romeo and Juliet is not a love story. It was never meant to be a love story. Shakespeare is not trying to write a love story. There's very specific stuff in there about how gross it is. And like, he's angry about this whole thing. Like, Shakespeare was anti-Romeo and Juliet as a thing. But one of the things that happens is that the prince keeps coming out and saying, you two families and your constant fighting are destroying this town. This whole town of Verona is being destroyed by the two of you not being able to get your shit together.
And you know what you could do is just talk.
You could just talk. And it takes their children literally dying for them to be like, you know what? Yep.
We should talk.
We should stop this. This is enough is enough. And that's what I feel like. I just want to be like, let's all sit down and we're going to read Romeo and Juliet and we're going to talk about what's actually going on here.
I will not fly you out there, but it would be amazing if you went to like the leaders of Hamas.
I go to
and the Israeli government. Yeah. You're just like, we read this together?
Let's read Romeo and Juliet and let's have a chat, because you know, my students were able to get there. So surely you can too.
But also I think that, and I'm not a literature person, but it leads into the children, because you see them almost be able to be together if hashtag they just talked.
If they just talked. I know. If they like, had not relayed the message.
I mean, I know it's olden times, but leave a note on your coffin that says,
hey kid, I'm not really dead. God, it's funny the stuff that you like pick up, but I was like, why didn't the friar just go to the tomb and wait for Romeo?
That'd be great. Communication.
They're like, hey, I thought you might show up. She's not dead. It's okay.
It's a whole play about lack of communication. I actually think it really is passed on to the, and I think he's trying to say like the kids also had the lack of communication in the end. They wanted to be together, but in the end, they just didn't talk.
No one would just sit down and talk. No one would be like, hey, here's what's happening. Hey, here am I feeling, you know, like it was just massive lack of communication.
And if the parents do it, the kids are going to do it.
Yep. And yeah, so. Okay, so everybody go watch Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Please do. And the soundtrack.
Oh, hands down the best soundtrack of all time.
Oh my gosh, Doves Cry by Prince Baby Cry. Remade.
That one song, the Kissing You song, when they first encounter each other through the first thing. Oh my God. I may just go
right now.
Honestly, if I was like, I need to have a themed wedding.
Oh my gosh, please.
Everyone was like, but Romeo and Juliet is not a love story. I'd be like, no, but this soundtrack is a love story.
I will dress up as a Catholic priest to marry you, but also you can also not have me do that. Please, and I could just,
I'm going to be an angel a la Juliet.
You have to.
Whoever I marry has to dress up as a knight.
What were your bridesmaids being?
Well, somebody has to be Mercutio. My friend Matthew Krueger is now designated to be Mercutio.
Oh my gosh. Matthew Krueger. The one person I compete against on the daily that I've never met in my life. But he gets two names. I'm Leah.
Leah pointed this out, and it's accurate that I only ever refer to my male friends with their whole names.
I'm just saying. Which Stuart, again, sorry if you get stuck. You can be Paul Rudd's character in
the yes, yeah, the astronaut.
The astronaut.
Somebody has to be John Leguizamo too.
I mean, it's a lot of Hawaiian shirts. I think
it's a lot of Hawaiian shirts. It's a lot of like kind of weird 90s vibes, but it's going to be amazing.
I agree. I think we have to end on that.
I do too. I think that's the best way to end this very serious conversation.
I know. Which is really, though, a very serious conclusion, which is to go watch Romeo and Juliet and you'll see what we're talking about. Yep. But anyway, thank you for being generous with us in this conversation, because we are not experts, but we also want to talk about it. But also, thank you for curling up with us on the couch and discussing it, because I think
enjoying this crackling fire that we're burning next to.
That we could not do, because I don't have a fireplace. Christy would die if she had a fireplace.
Yeah. And again, yeah, like I like it. I mean, like you said, we're still learning and sorting all of this out ourselves. Yeah. But at the end of the day,
we wanted to talk about it. I mean, well, Christy did, yeah. And then she was brave. She no, you were brave.
Well, wanted like, to is not the right word. Just felt like we had to. But,
yeah, and I will say I give full credit because I was like, but actually, I think it was good because
yeah,
I think we need to. And then someone can pop in and be like, no, this is this, and it's like, okay, yeah,
we welcome feedback about it, other points of view or other again. As news keeps continuing and as we keep learning more and more, obviously.
And if you pray for them.
And absolutely. All of our sincere.
I was going to say sincere thoughts and prayers.
Sincere thoughts
and prayers. As opposed to some other ones. And I'll maybe try to get my pal to come on next
time. Yeah, for sure.
See what she thinks about it.
And again, if you are coming to beer camp, keep in mind that we need questions for the hot ones
thing,
and that we are excited to see you
100%. Come talk to us.
Come chat with us.
All right. Well, Christy,
Baz Luhrmann calls.
Actually Indian food calls.
And ooh, that sounds delightful.
I know. I'm really excited.
We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.